Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, which showers us with the nectar of non-duality, we have come to the middle of the 11th chapter. This nectar of non-duality is a very special nectar. It is not something that you drink, but it is something that you learn. And as you learn it, the delusion that I am a particular body subject to birth and death, that delusion goes away. And thus, you regain your true nature, that there is really no limitation for you. You are not limited by time and space. You are everything that exists. You are eternal. And this awareness is not a matter of just intellectual understanding or just academic study or curiosity, but it is a tangible, practical experience subject to a lot of transformation in our consciousness or awareness. Our awareness of this divided world, I and the world, this fractured awareness, dividing line is to be actually removed through what is called the spiritual practice. The world encompasses many things. Spiritual practice is a matter of transformation. And that transformation comes in life gradually. First of all, to generate conviction about it is very difficult. It is not easy when we see the multiplicity all around, when our lives, they are all dependent on this multiplicity, I and the world. It is immensely difficult, friends, to get the awareness of oneness. Even to generate the conviction about it is not easy. And this 11th chapter began with Arjuna's request that, well, Lord, I have been hearing that you are everything. The whole world rises and falls in you. And you are my very nature. I understand all that. I believe all that. See, belief and conviction are not the same thing. There are billions of believers, but hardly anybody has the conviction. Because conviction is what shapes the life, not an idle belief that, yes, I believe there is God. How does it change your life? You do not see any change in the lives of those who are just believers. Their life is not much different from the non-believers. They may not be going to church, that's all. They may not be visiting any particular religious place. They may not be having particular religious observances. But apart from that, there isn't much of a change in the lifestyle of believers and non-believers. But when that belief changes into conviction, that conviction then starts transforming one's life. It is like when we get convinced of something that, well, somebody just told me this is the right medication for your some problem, say cholesterol. Then you believe it, you do not act upon it. But then when you get convinced that this works, and then you need it, it will bring a lot of good to you, to your health. It will do a lot of good to your health. When you are convinced, then you start taking that medication. So similarly, Arjuna is saying that all what you are saying is true, but I am not still getting that conviction. And so I pray to you, will you show me really how the whole world is in you? If possible, I want to get that glimpse, even a glimpse of some reality beyond this phenomena is a great force in transforming the life. So every aspirant prays for it, looks for it, that let me get a glimpse of the beyond. And that will then make me convinced that there is something out there apart from this mundane existence. There is something more to it. So this conviction is generated by what is called this all-encompassing form, the vision of the universal form of Lord Krishna. So we have been studying this extremely poetic chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The descriptions are wonderful. Not that they demand lot of explanation. It is a matter for feeling that Arjuna is expressing his feelings when Lord shows that immensity of his appearance and how tiny then you are. You feel overwhelmed by that tremendous experience. That experience is difficult to be handled by a common nervous system. It gets shattered if it does not prepare itself to handle it. It is therefore the strength is very important in life. The physical strength, emotional strength, all that is very important for the spiritual life. Swami Vivekananda therefore was never tired of repeating this, that be strong. Strength is religion. Weakness is the cause of all sinful life. You must be strong. So that strength is what makes you get the feeling of this immensity. Otherwise, the nervous system that is just capable of experiencing these little mundane joys and sorrows and elations and depressions, that nervous system will just have a big breakdown there. All the circuit breakers there, they will just break there and nothing will function. So therefore, it is said that you should have this strength. Arjuna is feeling it because of the assimilation of Krishna's advice for such a long time, and still he is overwhelmed by that vision. And so he is not capable of finding the right words. Whatever is coming to his mind, he is trying to describe and praise that. So we were discussing the verse from 38-39
that prajapatistvam prapitamahascha namo namaste stu sahasrakritvah punascha bhuyopi namo namaste. You are the wind god, death, fire, sea gods, the moon, the Prajapati, and also the great grand fire. Salutations, a thousandfold salutations to you, salutations again and again to you. This is what Arjuna is trying to describe. Whatever great it appears, we don't need to go into the detailed meaning of these words. What it is indicative is the Arjuna's feeling of that immensity of the divine vision. He continues further that he is not satisfied even with a thousand salutations. So he says in the next verse, Nama purastha datha prishthataste namostute sarvata eva sarva. That in the next line he says that, oh well, salutations to you all around. Oh, all salutations to you in front and from behind. Salutations to you all around. You are of infinite prowess, infinite valor. You pervade everything, and so you are everything. It is when this understanding is not very easy to come. It took, I remember those days when I was a college student, and then this idea came that, well, God is all-pervading. That means God alone is. Like the wood is pervading all the chairs here. So what is it, what all chairs are? Just wood. Imagine everything is pervaded by God. Suppose I am pervaded with God. So in general, an imagination, because of that sticking to that little self, comes that I am like a box and God is filled with within. Like you have an ice cream box. So box is there and it is filled with ice cream. So God has filled all every pot. But imagine that that pot also is made of God, because that also is pervaded by God. Then what else is there? The space between all the different objects, that also is filled with God. So what does it mean? God alone really is. There is nothing but God. So Arjuna is feeling that truth now. Then he says, that look, I was thinking of you just like a friend of mine. These Arjuna and Krishna, as physical entities, they were just grew together. They were having the similar age, and so they played together as children. And Arjuna remembers all the pranks he has played on Krishna, and that Krishna is not really little friend like what I used to think of him, that he is just my friend. No, he is God himself appearing in so many different forms. And so he starts praying that, oh, please forgive me for all these things that I did. Sakheti matva prasabham yaduktam he Krishna he Yadav he Sakheti ajanata mahimanam tavedam maya pramadat pranayena vapi yachya vaha sartham asatkritosi viharishayasana bhojaneshu ekothapvapyachyutastatsamakshyam tatkshamaye twamahamaprameyam. Whatever I, not knowing the greatness and this form of yours, may have said to you importunately, out of ignorance and affection, addressing you as, O Krishna, O Yadava, O friend, regarding you as my friend, and in whatever way you may have been alighted out of fun, at sport, in bed, on the seat, or in eating, either alone or in company, all that, O Achyuta, I entreat you, the incomprehensible one, to forgive. And now he remembers how he had called. Those names are when uttered in somewhat jest, and with some sarcasm associated with it, they mean something different, like Krishna means, oh, just, hey, you dark one. And that is, his name is Krishna, but what it means again is dark. So he might have uttered the word like that. And then also, hey, Yadava, means you belong to, after all, a cowherd clan. What other good things you know? So, Yadava, just playing pranks. So, in the children, they tease each other like, I must have teased you many times. I must have uttered so many wrong things to you, which I now know that it wasn't proper for me to all that, to say all those things. Oh, please forgive me for that. What you really are, as I see, Pitasya Lokasya Characharasya Tumasya Pujyasya Gurur Gariyan Natvat Samosti Abhyadhika Kutonyo Lokatraye Apratima Prabhavah Tasmat Pranamya Pranidhaya Kayam Prasadaye Tvam Ahamisha Medyam Piteva Putrasya Sakheva Sakhyuh Priya Priyayar Hasideva Sudhum. You are the father of this world of moving and unmoving things, adorable, and a teacher greater than any superior. There is none indeed equal to you in all the three worlds, let alone anybody being your superior. How then could be one greater than you? O you of unrivaled power, therefore, prostrating the body and bowing down to you, I entreat you, the adorable Lord, to be gracious. Just as a father forgives his son, a friend his friend, a lover his beloved, even so you should forgive me, O Lord. So all this is being said because of the overwhelming emotions that Arjuna is feeling at this vision. That vision is very powerful something, and so it shakes the whole conviction in the reality of this mundane world, and Krishna is seen very differently now. Adrishta purvam rishito smidrishtva bhayena cha pravyathitam mano me tadeva me darshaya deva rupam prasid devesha jagannivasa kiritinam gadinam chakrahastam icchami tvam drashtumaham tasaiva tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena sahasrabhavo sahasrabaho bhava vishwamurte. O Lord, seeing what has never been seen before, I am overjoyed, but my mind is extremely agitated through fear. Show me that very old form. O gods of gods, O abode of the universe, be gracious. I like to see you as before, diademed, bearing a mace and disc in your hands. Assume that very form with four arms, O thousand armed ones, O you of universal form. Now, although Arjuna is overwhelmed by all this and he is feeling great joy, and yet he is not able to sustain that. He is getting shattered because of the fear that comes with it. We are attached to this world, I and mine. And when that divine vision tries to take it away, we are overcome with great fear and feel, not that. I want to see you as God, okay, as somebody whom I can worship. So he prays to Krishna, enough of this universal form. Assume that form which people keep in the shrine and worship, and with four hands, one hand having a mace to kill your enemies. That doesn't kill you, but you want your enemies to be killed so that their two hands holding arms and one hand giving you the boons, another hand giving you the forgiveness and fearlessness. So that form, oh, I want just to see that form. And that is how, if we are not prepared, the practice of religion remains there. That we cannot really go beyond that unless we transcend this fear of losing this individuality. A very funny idea, but that is how we have, that this is I and this is mine, and if God is everything, then I will lose everything, is it not? So I feel, no, it should not be lost. I am a believer, I accept God, but okay, that God who remains on the altar in the shrine, a little away from me, and I offer a few flowers and some worship, something to a little food to, in offering, and I bow down, but oh Lord, you remain there, let me remain here, and that's about it. So don't come too close. It is very difficult. Even a great competent students like Vivekananda, when he was a young college student going to Sri Ramakrishna, one day Sri Ramakrishna asked him, hey, suppose there is a nectar filled glass, the glass is full, and suppose you are a fly, how will you suck that nectar? And Vivekananda says that, I will sit on the edge very carefully, at the edge of that glass, and protrude my trunk and slowly sip very carefully. Sri Ramakrishna asked, why, what is the need to be so careful? Well, if I fall down inside the glass, did I not tell you that it is glass full of nectar, you don't die there? So that is what a drop has the fear, that if I lose my dropness, if I lose my littleness, if I lose my pettiness, I will be gone. No, you become infinite. You become ocean. You regain your true existence, what you really are. As drop, you have no existence at all. What is an existence of a drop? Continuously being buffeted and is going to go away, getting shattered. As we were discussing last Sunday, that what is this life? It is waiting to die. That is what we call living. It is, we are just waiting to die. And that thing is being called as living. That existence of drop is like that, and just waiting to die. So the real life comes when we become ready, when we give up this clinging to dropness. And what we become then? Then we become ocean. Then our existence becomes real existence. We don't die, but we become infinite. So, that is what Arjuna is scared of. So, Sri Krishna says, okay, if you don't want, as once Narendranath was touched by Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna always thought him to be of a very high competence, and he was. But all this play had to go on, so when he touched him, he that very powerful touch just shattered this dividing line, I and the world, and that great fear again seized Narendra's awareness, and he screamed, "Oh, what are you doing this to me? I have my parents." Then Sri Ramakrishna smiled and said, "Okay, let it be. For now, then let it be." He was just testing the instrument, so and saw that there is some adjustment still needs to be done. So Arjuna could not withstand this vision and so prayed that please give, come to that form where you are God, but a God that I can worship from a distance, not something that I would like to be a part of it, merge with. And that is fine if we are making an advancement. This spiritual journey is a journey in the sense that you do not find yourself at the destination immediately. There are steps that one has to go through. There is time factor in it. And so the question is if we are going in right direction or not. So this vision makes Arjuna take the right direction, that's all. So then Lord said, "Okay, that's very good." Lord tells Arjuna, "Maya prasannena tava arjunedam rupam param darshitam atmayogat tejo mayam vishvam anantam adyam yanme tvadanyena nadrishta purvam na veda yajna adhyanair na danair na chakriyabhir tapobhir ugraihi evam rupa shakya aham nriloke drashtum tvadanyena kuru pravira mate vyathamacha vimodha bhavo drishtva rupam ghoramidrammamedam vyapethabhi pritamana punastvam tadeva me rupamidam prapashya. Lord says, "Oh, being pleased, I have shown you, Arjuna, through my yoga power, this supreme form of mine, resplendent, universal, infinite and primeval, which has not been seen before by anyone else than you." Of course, some others have also seen this. Right there, it seems that Arjuna was seeing and Sanjaya also was seeing. And Sanjaya was describing it to Yudhishthira, to Dhritarashtra, the king there. So, the two at least were seeing it. Others were not privy to this vision. Also, we read in the childhood story of Krishna that his mother Yashoda once saw a similar form. Not to this extent in details, but a similar form that when little child Krishna, she was scolding him. Because for her, he was not a god of the universe, but a little child to be taken care of. A little child that needs to be taken care of, and if he is at mischief, then needs to be admonished too. So, she had told, like all mothers tell the little kids, "Hey, don't eat the clay." So she also had told this little Krishna, "Hey, I want you shouldn't eat that." But then again, when she was at work and comes out to see and sees some earth sticking Krishna's lips, "Hey, you fellow, you were again at it. Huh? Why did you eat this earth?" And Krishna said, "No, no, Mom, I didn't." "What, you didn't? Again, telling lies too? Open your mouth. Let me see." And she never expected what will be seen. She opens the mouth, and not a little earth, the whole earth and the whole universe everything was seen there, and she just was so overwhelmed, ran with fear that something had happened to her. But next moment she forgot this vision again, thought, no, he is after all a little kid that I need to take care of. So, the Lord of the universe, but still, she thinks that she must take care of him. So, that is how the divine visions sometimes come to people. Arjuna says, Krishna says to Arjuna that you are very fortunate. Remember this great fortune that has come your way. It is a very, very rare thing. And it does not come to anyone just because somebody has done lot of studies or a lot of those sacrifices or any such big actions. It says, na veda yajna dhyanai, by doing lot of studies or the ritualistic Vedic sacrifices or giving lot of alms, lot of gifts. Oh no. Or some big actions that people will praise you about. All that, none of that is capable of bringing this vision. It comes only through the grace of Lord. There is no other way to have it, because it is not in your power at all. It is at the pleasure of somebody. You have to ask it from someone who has it. So it is the pleasure of Lord that yes, it is being shown. The idea is here that unless our ego is subdued, this vision doesn't come. You cannot say that I will put in so many efforts and then get it. What do you think? Who am I? Okay, so no, that is not the way to get the vision. You are just strengthening your ignorance, that's all. So he says, okay, don't get scared. I will bring you back the same vision, and then that what you had asked, that four arms. Not actually even now the vision of Krishna as a friend, as a charioteer in the battlefield there, not that vision, but Lord Vishnu. That Lord Vishnu's vision with four arms, and that is being shown to Arjuna here. It is Saumya, therefore, Sanjay Arjun says here, when that form comes, that Drishtvedam Manushyam Rupam Tava Saumyam Janardana, the 51st verse. Idanim Asmi Samritha Sachetaha Prakritim Gataha. Arjuna said, O Janardana, that is another name of Lord, seeing this benign human form of yours, I have now become self-composed and come to normal state, benign form. The earlier form was not considered benign by most of us. We will not look upon it as a benign form. Actually, that is benign form. But because of our ignorance and wanting to stick to this I and mine, the destruction of I and mine was not seen as benign. So actually that is benign, but we don't want that. We consider it to be destructive. We want this universe to remain like this. We also want to have all this preserved like this. Everything should continue like this in ignorance. That is our dilemma. You just see how our thinking goes in contradictions. We want things to change, and yet not change enough to destroy. If it is not changing, we get bored. If nothing is changing, imagine, would we like that? No, the things have to happen, things need to change. It is, otherwise we get bored. Same thing over and over again, now we get bored. So we want change. But we do not realize that change means destruction. It is going towards destruction. That is what is called changing. So, that is how our behavior is caught in contradictions. So, we call that which is actually benign. There is nothing wrong there. Even if you try to hold on to any name and form, that is by its very nature going away. It is not going to remain eternally. We get caught up in that this is my so-and-so and should remain forever. What remain forever? The death is talking, and this moment, if not this moment, next moment we are going to be swallowed by it. That is, no relation is going to be permanent, and no person is going to be permanent, no form is going to be permanent. What is permanent? That which is never born, that which is never going to die, that which is all-pervading, that is permanent. And so there our quest should be directed to that. So, Arjuna understands and yet doesn't understand, a state of spiritual aspirant that understands but still is not ready to give up. What will happen to me? Swami Vivekananda used to make a little fun that when I speak of this truth, people come and ask that, well then what will happen to my individuality? I asked them, where is your, and then he used to pronounce that word with separate letters. Where is your individuality? Tell me, where it is? Is it in your nose? Is it in your eyes? Is it in your skin? Where is your individuality? Where is your identity that you feel that you will lose? If you suppose put on a different color shirt, then does it change your identity? If your skin color changes, does it change your identity? Just think about it. Where is our identity? Identity depends on that which does not change. It is interesting, you know, that if you have the, for example, the ID that you may have to show at the airport when you travel, you have ID, and a photograph has to be there. Now that photograph, even if you, in the photograph you have a black coat on, and if you are going with a white shirt, still you will be allowed. Because that photograph does not depend on what shirt you put on. But your facial appearance and all that should be same. Even facial appearance changes, not easily discernible, so they look at the eyes. They have a little flashlight and they look at the photograph, that eyes of there. So once I asked that person, hey, what do you look at it? Am I looking the same? And he said, your eyes look exactly as they are there. So because eyes, they do not, supposedly they don't change much. Because the facial appearance may change. You may wear a beard which in the photograph is not there. Then it is difficult to recognize just the figure. You may do your hair differently and the photograph may not show that properly. So, therefore, some feature that doesn't change that fast, that is to be looked into. It is what ID means, it's something that doesn't change. So, what is there that doesn't change, that is really what each of us is. The unchanging self that was never born, never undergoes any change, it never dies. It is everywhere because it is not body. Body is here today, somewhere else a little. You all came here about 7 o'clock. Before that, the body wasn't here. But were you not here?
And are you here now just because body is here? Just think. The mind may be thinking of many other things. The mind may not be here at all. And that happens with many listening to such discourses. The mind runs away from here. Body cannot easily run away. So it sits here till I say the closing prayers. It sits here. But the mind doesn't obey all those restrictions. It starts thinking what my daughter must be doing now and just goes away. So it is that I, is body I? No. And if body is not I, then I am not born, I am not growing, I am not dying. Am I the mind? That also changes. I am not that either. So by having this analysis, you know that you are actually the all-pervading self. So one has to get to that level, not just intellectually, but experientially. So Lord tells now that look, sudurdarsham idam rupam drishtavanasi yanmama deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshanakamshinah naham veda na tapasa na dane na chejaya shakya evam vidho drishtum drishtavanasi mam yatha. Neither by the Vedas or the previous. Exceedingly difficult is it to see this form of mine that you have seen. Even the gods are ever eager to see this form. Neither by the Vedas, nor by the austerities, nor by gifts, nor by sacrifices, am I visible in this form as you have seen me. But then I can never be seen then in this form. No, there is only one way of seeing it. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhorjuna jnatum drashtum chatatvena praveshtum chaparam tapa. I like this verse a lot. It is a positive expression of what has been told, that all the other actions, like say one may think that I will do big work in the world that people will praise me for, my name will reverberate through centuries. Nobody cares, but just we imagine, you know, that I will do such thing that the generations to come will remember me. Oh, all those names are only on the tombstones, you see. Nobody even remembers. When I was walking through that Commonwealth Avenue in Boston, you see in the middle all those statues are there. Those people must have been quite famous once upon a time. Now nobody knows who those people are. And that is not too long ago, just about 200, 300 years away, that many years ago. But we think that my name will reverberate through all the centuries. Oh, your grandchildren or great-grandchildren may not remember. But that is how our foolishness is. So Lord says that all that is not helpful to get this great vision. What is helpful? Bhaktya, by the devotion. But by undivided devotion, O Arjuna, can I in this form be known and realized in truth and entered into, O scorcher of foes? O scorcher of foes, he says to Arjuna, that you are a very brave person, a courageous person. You are not scared of anything. So therefore you can take up this addressing here to Arjuna. You will see in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna's different names are used to bring out certain very important features of his personality. Like sometimes he is
called Partha. Partha is his name from his mother's side, actually. His the son of Pritha becomes Partha. Pritha was the name of his mother, Kunti. Kunti has another name, Pritha. So, Partha refers to that. So, just to indicate, look at your mother, how steadfast she was in her devotion. Her devotion to Krishna is very exemplary. So, sometimes that epithet is used for Arjuna. Sometimes he says, Mahabaho, you are a person of immense strength, strong armed ones. Mahabaho means the one with strong arms. So you should not be having these weaknesses in you. Why do you think that you are such a weakling? You are strong. Come on, call on that strength. So here he says that Paranthapa, this is used many times by Krishna, that you are a scorcher of foes. So you are not worried or afraid of the foes. So the enemies on the spiritual path, the obstacles in the spiritual path are to be looked upon as enemies to be fought. So don't get scared with them. So he says, how should this devotion be practiced? This is the last verse of this chapter. Mat karma krit mat paramo mat bhaktah sangavarjitah nirvairah sarvabhuteshu yasamameti pandava. He who works for me, has me for the supreme goal, is devoted to me and non-attached, bears no hatred towards any creature, such person attains to me, O Pandava. A very beautiful idea is presented here, that who actually gets this. Lord says that devotion, through devotion you get it. But what is the meaning of devotion? Not just getting emotionally excited. That is not the only idea in devotion. Devotion means it is love directed to God that gets called devotion. So love, just as it expresses itself in working for the one to whom you love, that you will be working for that person, and you will also be caring that for that person. So if you love for God, if you have love for God, devotion, then all your actions will be directed towards that God, because your only love in life is God. So all actions will get directed to God. So mat karma krit. So do only the actions of God. What does it mean? What are the actions of for God? Are there actions stamped that this is action for God and this is not action for God? Do we get labels on the actions, that you look at the label, is this action for God, then I will do, otherwise not? No, no such labels are there. All actions done with proper awareness are the actions for God. Thinking that God is the doer, and God is the all-pervading reality, when you keep that as the background knowledge and do not expect anything for yourself, if you are not selfish in those actions, then any such action is the work for done for God. So, mat paramo, keeping God alone as the highest ideal. What is to be achieved in this world? The devotee looks at this and sees that everything else comes and goes. I am not interested in that. I want something that never goes away. And so keeps that as the highest ideal in life. Then, madbhaktah,
So the love, the devotion, the feelings are all turned towards God. Sangha Varjitaha is not therefore attached to anything in this world. That person acts in the world, does all the jobs. If that person is, say, seemingly a student, say, studying in some class, then that person does that very well, that job is done very well, but knows that that is not the highest goal. It is a step, and then that person does that without attachment to it. It behaves with all the people, the father, mother, son, daughter, parents, whatever, behaves with all the due respect and performs all the duties to that station, but never considers that any of that is mine, doesn't get attached. So that is, and automatically that person also becomes nirvaira sarva bhuteshu, has no enmity towards anyone. Not easy to achieve, friends. Anything, anybody that puts an obstacle in my pleasure becomes my enemy. And therefore, this is a practice that one has to keep on doing. Let me not have enmity towards anyone in life. And such a person, Lord says, comes to me, and then it's concluded. इति श्रीमद् भगवत गीतासु उपनिषत्सु ब्रह्मविद्यायां योगशास्त्रे श्री कृष्णार्जुन संवादे विश्वरूप दर्शन योगो नाम एकादशोध्यायः. Thus concludes the 11th chapter titled as the universal vision form, universal form vision, and this is Bhagavad Gita, which is an Upanishad. Here it is said, Bhagavad Gita su Upanishad. So it is Upanishad, the highest authority, the scriptural authority in Hindus is ascribed to Upanishads. They are the impersonal truths, and therefore they have, they being the direct revelations of the sages, have the highest authority. So Bhagavad Gita is technically not an Upanishad. It is not part of the Vedas actually, but yet because Lord has spoken it, it has still that authority, and so it gets called as Upanishad. And how it is? It has two aspects, Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. Brahma Vidya means intellectually understanding the truth, and Yoga Shastra means putting that into practice. Illumining your life through that is Yoga Shastra. So this is, let us pray that this wisdom comes to us more and more. Let us be tuned to our ideal in life as God realization. Let us try to make progress in that direction in every possible way, and thus we will attain the Supreme. In life, we shall start the study of the 12th chapter not coming Friday. Coming Friday, you will have an advantage of listening to some wonderful discourse on TV. It is something that is that will be shown here. And which one that we have not finalized, it will be announced in a day or two, maybe by Sunday. So you are invited to attend that. Friday after that, we will have the beginning, in the first Friday of November, we will begin the study of the 12th chapter, which is considered one of the most important chapters of Bhagavad Gita, and many people recite it every day. 12th chapter is recited by many devotees
every day because of its tremendous importance. So Grisha, it is titled as Bhakti Yoga, the Yoga of Devotion. That Arjuna has been told, be a devotee. What does it mean? So 12th chapter will give details of that. So now we will conclude with the closing prayers. But if you have any questions, we can take up that first. Any questions? Yes, Abhijit?
Last time we saw God is the universal doer. And so my question is, can any doing entity be pure consciousness and pure existence? Like, if you're doing something, can you be like a pure, in the state of being pure consciousness?
Yes.
You can.
You can. You don't consider you to be the doer, feel that God is the doer, and you have the universal consciousness. It is the doer, if you have the idea, I am the doer, and this is something separate that I am doing, then the consciousness is fractured. It is not pure awareness. But if you see this as a play, that it is all happening on the screen and nothing is really happening, you are not the doer. If that awareness is there, then you have the pure awareness. It is therefore not a very easy thing to have. But it is, in principle, of course, possible. When that ignorance about I goes away, that I am so and so, then everything that such person does, everything is done without any impurity in consciousness. I gave an example many times here, very illuminating example. It is about some Shankaracharya. This anecdote relates to that Chandrasekhar Saraswati, who has written a beautiful treatise on Viveka Chudamani. And people used to consider him to be the knower of Brahman. So one devotee went to see him. And at that time he was doing the ritual worship. And this man started wondering why he needs to do worship. Worship is, after all, for those who are on the lower plane. Such person should do worship. Why he needs to do worship now if he is the knower of Brahman? So later he asked this question to him, that does a knower of Brahman, he didn't ask, that would have been considered rather arrogant, that why you were doing worship if you are knower of Brahman. So he asked in a veiled manner that does a knower of Brahman need to do worship? And this Swami answered so brilliantly by putting another question. What should he do? That's the question. What should he do? What applies to worship will be applicable to anything, because that person does and doesn't do anything. That is, Lord also says that he does everything, but although he does everything, he does nothing. So, at one level you do everything, at another level you do nothing. Suppose you are playing a role in a play, and there in the play you are told that kill this fellow, and as an actor you killed that fellow. Did you kill?
No.
Did you kill? What was your awareness at that time? You are not killing, and yet killing. It is. So similarly, this will be your awareness while behaving in this world. So, yes, your awareness can be very pure. So, let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Visrayi Yah Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namani Yani Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.